Chapter 4, MV Golden Dawn, Indian Ocean. The mugger's hand was like a vice around Yannicka Dahl's mouth and nose. She couldn't breathe, and any effort to fight him off only made it seem worse. Wriggling against the restraint, she managed to draw a sip of air, barely enough to stave off the blackness threatening to engulf her. She twisted one way and then the other, only to have the hand inexorably stay with her. She had seconds before unconsciousness overcame her, but there was nothing she could do. It was like drowning, the most terror-filled death she could ever imagine, only it wasn't a cold water's embrace that would take her life, but the hands of a stranger. Yannicka fought one last time, a desperate lunge to break free. She came awake with a wet gasp, her head and shoulders lifting from the bed, only to be dragged back by the sheets and blankets covering her. The clear plastic cannula feeding pure oxygen into her nose had wrapped itself around her throat, choking her as much as the asthma attack she was suffering. Filled with the chilling after-effects of the nightmare that always accompanied an attack when she was asleep, Yanni groped for the inhaler on the bedside table, dimly aware that she was still in the ship's hospital. She placed the mouthpiece between her lips and fired off several blasts of medicine, drawing in the Ventolin as deeply as her fluid-filled lungs would allow. As the medicine relaxed her restricted airways, Yanni was able to inhale more of the drug and eventually calm the most acute symptoms of the attack. It didn't help that her heart was still racing from the nightmare or that she had dislodged part of her cannula so only one nostril was getting oxygen. She readjusted the plastic tube and felt the immediate effects. She glanced at the monitor over her bed and saw her oxygen stats start to rise immediately. She smoothed her sheets and settled deeper into the inclined bed. This was her third day in the dispensary, the third day of being alone for hours on end, bored out of her mind and cursing her lungs' weakness. Her friends had stopped by regularly, but she knew none of them wanted to stay. Not that she blamed them. Watching her gasp like a fish and suck on her inhaler wasn't a pretty sight. She hadn't even had the strength to let the lone nurse change her sheets and could imagine what her body smelled like. The curtain around her bed was suddenly drawn back. Dr. Passman moved so softly that Yanni never knew he had entered the recovery room. He was in his 60s, a retired heart surgeon from England who had given up his practice following his divorce and had signed on to be a shipboard doctor with the Golden Cruise Lines to enjoy a more peaceful life and to deny his ex-wife half of the salary he had once made. "I heard you cry out," he said, looking at the monitors rather than his patient. "Are you okay?" "Just another attack," Yanni managed to smile. "Same as I've been having for 3 days now." She then added, in her lilting Scandinavian accent, "It wasn't as bad as before. I think they're passing." "I will be the one making that determination," he said, finally looking at her. There was concern in his eyes. "You're as blue as a berry. My daughter has chronic asthma, but not like you."
"I'm used to it," Yannicka shrugged. "I had my first attack when I was 5, so I've been dealing with it for 3/4 of my life.
I've been meaning to ask, are there other members of your family who have it?"
"I don't have any brothers or sisters, and neither of my parents had it, though my mother told me her mother had it when she was a little girl."
Passman nodded. "It tends to run in families. I would have thought being at sea and away from pollution would have reduced your symptoms."
"I had hoped so too," Yanni said. "That's one of the reasons I took a job waitressing on a cruise ship. Well, that, and to get out of a small town with nothing to do but watch fishing boats come in and out of the harbor."
"You must miss your parents."
"I lost them 2 years ago."
A shadow passed behind her dark eyes.
"Car accident."
"I am sorry." "Your color's coming back," Passman said to change the subject. "And your breathing seems to be getting easier."
"Does that mean I can leave?" Yanni asked.
"Afraid not, my dear. Your oxygen saturation level is still below what I would like to see."
"I suppose it doesn't matter to you that today is the cruise social," she said with a trace of disappointment.
According to the clock on the far wall, the party was only a few hours away. The dance was the first opportunity for the younger members of the ship's hotel staff to cut loose a little since the Golden Dawn had left the Philippines 2 weeks earlier. It was to be the highlight of the cruise for the waiters, waitresses, maids, and off-duty crew, which happened to be comprised of some devilishly handsome Norwegians. Yanni knew some of the younger passengers were going to attend as well. It was all anyone had been talking about for a week. "No, it doesn't," the doctor said. The door to the small hospital ward opened, and a moment later, Elsa and Karin, Yanni's best friends on the Golden Dawn, swept into the room amid a cloud of perfume. They were from Munich, a couple of years older than Yanni, and had spent the past 3 years working for the cruise line. Elsa was a pastry chef, and Karin worked the same dining room shift as Janneke. They were dressed to kill. Karin wore a black dress with spaghetti straps that accented her ample chest, while Elsa wore a tank dress and, from the lack of lines under the clinging fabric, nothing else. Both were heavily made up and giggly. "How are you feeling?" Elsa asked and sat on the edge of Yanni's bed, ignoring Passman.
"Jealous? You aren't well enough to come to the party?"
Karin scowled at the doctor as if it was his fault Janneke's asthma wasn't in check. Yanni pushed her damp hair off her forehead.
"Even if I was, I wouldn't stand a chance the way you two are dressed." "Do you think Michael will like it?"
Karin pirouetted.
"He'll die for it," Elsa told her friend.
"Are you sure he's coming?" Yanni asked, caught up in gossip despite the pain constricting her chest. Michael was one of the passengers who sat at the table they served, a Californian with blonde hair, blue eyes, and a body honed from a lifetime of exercise. It was generally agreed by the female staff that he was the best-looking guy on the boat. She also knew that Karin and Michael had made out on more than one occasion. Karin smoothed her dress.
"He made sure to tell me himself."
Passman cut into their conversation. "It doesn't bother you, he's a responsivist." She shot the doctor a look.
"I grew up with four brothers and three sisters. I don't think not having children is such a bad idea."
"Responsivism is more than not having children," he pointed out. Karin took it as an insult that she didn't know what the group who had chartered the ship believed in.
"Yes, it is also about helping humanity by making family planning an option for millions of third-world women and reducing the burden our population places on the earth. When Dr. Lydell Cooper founded the movement in the 1970s, there were 3 billion people in the world. Today there are twice that many, 6 billion, and the rates aren't slowing. 10% of all humans who have ever lived, going back 100,000 years, are alive right now."
"I saw the same informational placards they have placed around the ship," Passman said archly.
"But don't you think responsivism goes beyond social consciousness? For a woman to join, she has to agree to have her fallopian tubes tied. It sounds to me more like, well, a cult."
"That's what Michael said people tell him all the time."
With the stubbornness of youth, Karin felt she had to defend her crush's convictions.
"Just because you don't know all the facts doesn't mean you can dismiss what he believes."
"Yes, but surely you see..." Passman let his voice trail off, knowing that whatever argument was put forth would stand little chance against a 20-something girl with raging hormones.
"Actually, you probably wouldn't. I think you two should let Janneke rest. You can tell her all about the party later."
He left Yanni's bedside.
"Are you going to be okay, Schnookeputzi?"
Elsa asked, touching Yanni's thin shoulder.
"I'll be fine. You two have fun, and I want lurid details tomorrow."
"Good girls don't kiss and tell," Karin said and grinned.
"In that case, I don't expect either of you to be good girls."
The two Germans left together, but Karin returned a second later. She eased up to the head of the bed.
"I want you to know that I think I'm going to do it."
Yanni knew what she meant. She knew that Michael was more than a passing crush for her friend, and that apart from kissing a few times, he had spent hours talking to her about his beliefs.
Karen, that is way too big of a step. You don't know him that well. I've never really wanted kids anyway, so what's the big deal if I have my tubes tied now or in a few years?
Don't let him talk you into it, Yanni said as forcefully as her weakened body would let her.
Karen was nice, but not the strongest person Janneke had ever met.
He didn't talk me into it, she dismissed too quickly. It's something I've thought about for a long time. I don't want to be worn out at 30 like my mother was. She's 45 now and looks 70. No thanks. Besides, she said with a bright smile, nothing will happen until we talk in Greece anyway.
Yanni took Karen's hand to emphasize her point.
This is a decision that will affect the rest of your life. Give it some more thought, okay?
Okay, Karen said as if to a parent.
Yanni gave her a quick hug.
Good. Now, go have some fun for me.
Count on it.
Their perfumes lingered long after the girls were gone. Yanni's face was scrunched in concentration. The ship wasn't due to dock in Piraeus for another week, giving her hope that she and Elsa could talk Karen out of her decision. One of the prerequisites for becoming a responsivist is being sterilized, a vasectomy for men and a tubal ligation for women. It was part of their code to agree to not add more children to an already overpopulated planet, a dramatic first step that was difficult, expensive, and in later years, impossible to reverse. Karen was too young for that just so she could bed a good-looking guy. She drifted off to sleep, and when she awoke, a few hours had passed. She could hear the muffled rumble of the ship's engines, but could hardly feel the calm rocking of the Indian Ocean swells. She wondered how Elsa and Karen were enjoying the party. Janneke woke again an hour later. She hated being in the hospital. She was lonely and bored, and for a moment considered grabbing her old clothes from under the bed and sneaking up to the ballroom for a peek. But her body just wasn't up to it, and again she closed her eyes. She heard a crash the instant before the mugger wrapped his hand around her throat again and started to squeeze. Janneke flashed awake, reaching for her inhaler just as the door to her room opened in a blaze of light from the office beyond. Stricken by the asthma attack, she wasn't sure what she was seeing. Dr. Passman staggered into the room. He wore a bathrobe and his feet were bare. It looked like the front of the robe and his face was covered in blood. Janneke sucked greedily on the inhaler, blinking to clear her eyes of sleep. Passman made an obscene cawing sound, and more blood dribbled from his mouth. Janneke gasped. He took two more faltering steps, and it seemed the bones of his knees dissolved. He fell back, and his body hit the linoleum floor with a wet smack. Janneke saw that wave-like ripples traveled the length of his body, as though his insides had been liquefied, and in seconds he was surrounded by a viscous moat of his own blood. She clutched her sheets tighter, drawing on the inhaler as she began to hyperventilate. Then another figure came into her room. It was Karen in her little black dress. She was coughing violently, wet, racking convulsions that spewed blood in a bright spray. Janneke screamed through her own coughing fit, terrified at what she was seeing. Karen tried to speak, but all that came out was a watery gargle. She stretched out with her arms in a supplicating gesture, her pale fingers reaching for Janneke. Janneke hated herself for recoiling back to the far side of her bed, but she could not will herself forward. A crimson tear escaped the corner of Karin's eye and left a thick red streak down to her jaw where it dripped, blooming like a rose when it pattered against her chest. Like Passman seconds earlier, Karin could no longer support herself. She tipped backward, making no move to break her fall. When she hit the floor, it was as though her skin didn't exist. Blood exploded everywhere as Karin's body came apart, and in the instant before Janneke Dahl went into catatonic shock, she was certain she was going insane.